and courtesy of the Center for Creative Communication, Centennial College. And podcasts will be available online, and there's a website listed on a handout at the back of the room on your way out if you'd like to take one. And also, for those who will be available this afternoon, we have our final industry conference session, Putting the Fun in Factual, so please come to that if you are here. And now I'd like to also mention that, unfortunately, Rose Simmons, who was listed as one of the participating panelists today, couldn't be with us because he had some last-minute meetings and wasn't unable to come to the festival. So we will proceed without him, but the panelists we do have and their presentations will sure to be worth your visit. So thanks for coming again. And I would like to now just welcome Nina Androich, senior writer of Screen, Real Screen. Thanks.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. And thank you very much for coming on this rainy morning to the Docs on Demand panel. My name is Alicia Androich, and I'm the senior writer at Real Screen Magazine. There are copies of the magazine available around the festival, so please feel free to pick one up. Today we are going to be discussing the ever-evolving online and interactive technologies that are giving filmmakers and producers like yourselves new ways to distribute your projects to a wider audience. Because really that's what it's all about, right? You want to get your projects out to as many people as possible and make sure that they see your films and engage with them. These days, filmmakers frustrated with the traditional distribution methods do have an alternative, the internet. It's a platform known for nurturing and supporting new talent, so you don't really need a shelf full of industry awards or a Rolodex full of powerful distributors anymore to be able to get your film out to a large audience. The internet is also known for allowing the public to interact with each other and filmmakers in ways that they can't with traditional film outlets. The technology allows the public to really grab hold of a film and engage with it. The internet is still seen as a relatively new route to audiences, but its impact on them and on filmmakers is being felt around the world. Now, I would like to introduce you to today's panelists. They are Nina Newman-Kadic. She is the manager of DocAir. That's an online film portal associated with the Ilava International Documentary Film Festival. And we have Rick Anderson. Rick is the president and CEO of Zip.tv, an online community for filmmakers. And that's the sister service of Zip.ca, an online DVD rental service. And we have Andrew Murr, who is the head of acquisitions for True Stories, a website dedicated to docs that launched at the end of last year. And it is part of AOL America, so it's got some heavyweight support. So what we'll do is let each of the panelists introduce themselves to you more fully and explain what their services are all about. And please do remember any questions that you think of along the way during their presentations, because we will have time for a Q&A at the end of the session after we have also had a group discussion up here. So with that being said, I will let the panelists explain more about themselves and their services to you. And we'll just go in order across the stage. So Nina, if we can start with you.
Sure. Hello. Thank you for coming. DocAir, as it was already said, DocAir is a festival portal. It is a selective platform for documentary films, for creative documentary films available online. And it was launched officially a year ago by Jihlava International Documentary Film Festival from Czech Republic, who during the past 10 years of its existence growing into the biggest of its kind in Central and Eastern European region. So DocAir is basically just a one segment among many other festival events or activities which we have been organizing during the past 10 years. I would like to mention just maybe some of them. It's a festival market, which is called Eat Silver, and it's specialized on Central and Eastern European documentary production. Then we have a pitching forum during the festival. We have many different workshops, panel discussions. We are publishing books about documentary. And the last segment of it is a DocAir online portal. Basically, the idea to initiate this portal came from three basic reasons. First one of them was to improve the international access to European creative documentary production, both contemporary and archive. And The second reason was to give a chance for those small, independent, not very often seen in a theatrical or broadcasted, which are not very often seen in a regular distribution, production companies from Eastern Europe to break through internationally and help shape their representation about this part of the world, which is the case, for example, with Poland, with Hungary, with Bulgaria. And the third reason was we were looking for the way how to prolong our festival, because very often we are faced with a problem that people, if they don't come to the festival to see the films, there is no other way, there is no access to our festival selection. I will get back to this last point later on during my presentation, because that's the thing which really set us apart from our so-called competitors. I don't like to use this word, but that's why Docker is a bit different from the rest of the platforms. Now maybe I would like to say a few words more detail, like technical and the structure about the web itself. So users can either submit their film online, application form or entry form is available online. I would just like to stress out here that submitted doesn't mean selected. We have a program committee, festival program committee, which is basically selecting these films for the online portal. I will say a few words later more about our criteria, static criteria for film selections. So either submission, or you can choose to watch the film. You can see the films. Films are selected in three basic categories. You can get an overview on contemporary filmmaking, board, short, feature length, and the students' work. We are putting really strong impact on educational purposes to give opportunity for film schools to present their work. We are also exploring film archives, so by this actually we are trying to point out the important masterpieces work from the past. In the category which is called Coming Soon, we are stressing on the films which are either in development or in production, but which we know we will play on Docker soon. Basically, concerning the technical details, there are three categories for seeing films. The one is either you can choose to stream the film, so you can see more details about format and downloading capacities. So you can either stream the film, or you can download it on a DivX or original DVD quality. Prices or the fees for individual screenings are individual. It depends from the length of the film, it depends from the director, it depends from the character, from the territory where the filmmaker comes from. All the approximate times and downloadings are listed just below. Concerning legal aspects of our web we are dealing with, it's interesting probably for all of you to follow this process in which technological improvement is necessarily transforming legal forms as well, yeah? And at least it's like that in Central and Eastern Europe, that legal system stays quite underdeveloped comparing to this technological improvement. So all our films are protected by license contracts, yeah? And licensor grants us a license to use, it's a non-exclusive license to use audiovisual work in a certain extent for the certain territories and part of the time, and a certain period, actually. For that period is mostly 2 years. And concerning territories, it's also individual, it depends from the film. But mostly we are presenting films on Central and Eastern European region. And those which are produced in Central and Eastern European region, since we are the only online portal in our region at the moment, so we are presenting them internationally, what means we have a right for the whole world. We don't really work with any particular protection system from piracy on our web. We do have a logo on each one of the films, so either for streaming or for download, so we don't use a digital rights management system. royalty rates between filmmaker or between licensor and the docker are shared 60-40. The greater part goes to the licensor. And that's it. I don't know if you have any other particular questions. We can get back to these legal aspects. We will discuss it probably during the presentation more in detail.
Right.
Now I would like to maybe say a few words more about film selection, which are on the docker. Concerning film selections, we do follow the festival tradition, what means we are really focusing on films with a high thematic and aesthetic merits, which are emphasizing, in a way, socially crucial topics. But also, Docker is a platform which is open for any kind of cinematic innovations. We are looking for progressive, provocative films which are stimulating this kind of creative dialogue between, in our festival case, audience and the filmmaker, in a Docker case, between the users and the filmmakers. So I think that this kind of profile we have is helping us really in building recognizable logo, which set us apart from a different, the fact that we are actually a selective platform, which is setting us apart from the other online platforms. What is new about Docker and what will appear by the end of this year is the fact that we are working on a system which would unite five of the most important documentary film festivals in Europe and in the North America as well into the one kind of chain, we will all work together on building this one logo. What means instead of having five documentary film festivals building each one of them their own platforms, we will create this united festival after festival event, which will be Docker, and each one of these festivals will have opportunity to present their own selection online. So this is something we are working on at the moment. It's a big new thing, which will hopefully appear by the end of this year.
Sounds like a huge mega Euro project to be undertaking, but that sounds very exciting. And now we're going to move over to Rick then, so that he can tell us about Zip.TV.
Thank you, and thanks for the opportunity to be here. It's a great festival. We're pleased to be associated with it. Happy to see it growing in popularity and success. And delighted to be here with you this morning to talk a little bit about Zip.ca and Zip.TV and what we're doing in space that's relevant to you. I guess I'm supposed to use this, right? Our base business, the one that got launched 3 years ago and the one that pays the bills today, is an online DVD rental service, a la Netflix and Blockbuster Online in the United States. We're the largest of those in Canada. We serve about 35,000 paying subscribers now. We've shipped about 7 million DVD rentals over the last couple of years. We rent out about 300,000 DVDs a month. We've got a library of 55,000 different titles, and our selection promise to our customers, to our members, is if it's legally available in Canada, we'll offer it to you. It's pretty simple. We aim to not be missing anything in terms of a DVD selection. So we're a genuinely committed long-tail supplier. We can get into some of the selection patterns amongst our members, but we have 25%, our members, like anybody else in the world, like blockbusters and new releases, and that's part of the mix. In fact, it's 100 titles out of our 55,000 account for about 25% of our selections, of our members' selections, of those 7 million that we've rented. And if we look at each quartile, the last quartile of our members' selections cover a span of 40,000 different DVD titles. And over 90% of those 55,000 titles in our library are accessed by one member or another every month. So they're not just sitting there inanimate. There's actually, an audience of people who are interested in this. interested in getting past the mainstream blockbuster feature film kind of inventory, although they, you know, it's interesting to look at the patterns. They're not different people consuming those. It's the same people consuming quite a broader range of things. So, you know, we see people renting obscure films that most people in Canada have never heard of, and the next day they're renting King Kong. And, you know, that's not too surprising when you actually think about it. Film buffs like films, and they like an array of films, not just one particular genre. We think that our website, there's not very much industry data published on this, but we think our website is the busiest video entertainment website in Canada. We have about 4 million page views a month. We've got beyond the 35,000 paying rental subscribers for our DVD service. We've got about 200,000 people who use our site regularly for other things, which I'll get to in a second. Documentaries are our third most popular category of title. You know, in our top 20 of all time list, An Inconvenient Truth sits there, and it continues to be in demand amongst our members today. You can hardly find it in rental stores in most of the country, but it continues to percolate in our environment, not just percolate, but to exist on a top 10 list. Right up against, you know, other films of the last few years. We've got over 3,600 films. I'm talking now about the DVD part of our world, the zip.ca core business. We've got 3,600 films in the documentary category. We believe that to be the largest selection of DVD, of documentaries available for rent anywhere in Canada, which is also true. That's part of our selection brand claim. It's also true of Bollywood titles, anime, you know, whatever category of foreign language titles, whatever category of DVD, of film you're interested in, we believe that we have the largest selection, usually by far, of any renter in Canada, of any rentaler in Canada. What we've done is, a couple of years ago, we recognized that that our website is not only being used by our members to access, to manage their zip lists of what films, what DVDs they want to rent, but they're actually using it in increasing numbers to rate movies, to research films, to review films. These are all features that we've added to our site over the last couple of years in order to respond to the kind of community type feeling. And we've become more and more conscious of the importance of this in terms of the service that we're providing to the public. So over the last few years, we've made a series of important changes in terms of how our service works and how our site works that have just have gone farther and farther down the road of opening it up to an ever broader community. One of the important things we did about a year ago is we completely opened the site up to anybody who wants to use it for free. It used to be you had to pay, be a paying member of our rental service in order to browse through the title selections and do research on who was in this this film and, you know, what are the various titles released by this director or something like that. We've now opened all of that up for anybody who wants to use it just for research or browsing. And we've added more features such as the ratings, the reviews. We've added recently blogs and forums on the site. All for basically free, we call them community users, of the community members of our website. And so it's becoming a hothouse for discussion and ratings and information and so on about films. What we see going on in the online space, it's just a couple of pieces of data here before I get into the online part of it. To date, we've collected over 3.5 million member ratings of the titles that are on our website, and over 50,000 reviews have been published by people, by community members on our website. And so not only are we a long tail provider, we're actually also following the internet philosophy of not being a gatekeeper. The titles that end up on our site being the most highly rated, the most frequently recommended and so on are driven by community selections, community reviews, community ratings. And we really don't tilt those in any way, shape or form. We let the community decide what's popular, what's good, what's not, and for and community members to speak to each other through the site in terms of that. Our purchasing of our titles is completely dependent on the number of selections that our members make of those titles. We don't buy more of something simply because it sounds like it's going to be promising or it's from a big studio or something. We buy more of something because we've got X number of selections by our members of it versus Y. And every single night, our technology, our systems rebalance our member demand for a title against our inventory of that title, and every single day we realign our purchasing to keep those things in balance with each other. So it's complete. We're pretty neutral in terms of what we buy, what we promote, what we recommend to people. It's driven by people's own experiences, by their own tastes, and by other members' recommendations and ratings of similar type films. What we've recently done is we put a what we call a member profile page. This is, again, participating in the communities type feeling, where people can speak about themselves and to the community about their films. And out of that, we started, we added in, it was August of last year, September of last year, that category of films called user-generated, where people can upload whatever they want on the website and share it and so on, a la YouTube. And so that's part of our community thing, also completely free. What we started doing in preparation for the migration, which we believe in, from physical distribution, a la DVD or high def DVDs, in preparation for the migration from physical distribution to online distribution, we've started acquiring titles, or rights to titles rather, for distribution through our website. And to date we've signed about half a dozen agreements with content aggregators and content producers, spanning a universe of about 60,000 titles. We've signed agreements with Akimbo, with Total Vid, with Rue, which is part of News Corporation. These are organizations that have acquired rights to online distribution of titles. Akimbo has a great library of BBC, National Geographic, Discovery Channel kind of films. Total Vid has about 15,000 titles that are highly informational and educational, how to cook risotto, how to learn to sail without tipping your boat on your head. You can watch it on your screen. And so on. So we're aggregating all of that kind of content and bringing it into our site. We're researching online sources of video content and adding links to those on our site. We're actually not hosting it. In that case, we're just actually showing people where they can get it, so that people who are interested in film, in video, can find everything that's available in one place and discuss it and rate it and recommend it to other people via our site. What we've done with the user-generated technology that we've built, which basically lets you go on our website and upload a video and let other people see it. You can tag it, categorize it however you want, describe it, provide a little synopsis, a capsule summary for it. What we've taken is that technology and opened it up to the independent film community and said, for the user-generated category, we have a size limit, a file size limit of 100 megabytes, which works out to 5 or 10 minutes of viewing depending on your file density, or your bit rate, and your quality. What we've done for the independent community is taken that limit off, and basically saying, we will provide you with free hosting and serving of your content on our site without any size limitation. So if you want to produce a 10-hour documentary and put it on the site, I don't really recommend that as an online experience, but we'll host it for you if you want to. And so what we've done just in the last couple of weeks is open the doors up for independent producers to use the user-generated technology that we've built on our site as a showcase for their content. We're doing that for free. We do have advertising on our site, so theoretically there's some advertising revenue, but you know, in our own business model, we don't believe that there's going to be meaningful revenue, and I don't want to mislead anybody into this. The way advertising rates work out in the online space is basically it's worth one penny, give or take a couple of decimal points, for each ad that's displayed to each viewer. That's if you had charged $10 CPM for advertising. And so there's not very much money in advertising supported video, which of course is is most of the online video experience right now is free advertising supported. What we're doing for the independent producers is we're going to allow people to, this fall, set a price and offer them on a pay-per-view basis and keep 100% of that revenue. These are for films that are pre-commercial distribution. Once you get into a commercial situation, you can either take it off our site if that's what you want to do, or continue it there on a more commercial type basis. But so we're saying to people who are trying to get material noticed, give it a home online, so it has a chance of getting a theatrical or broadcast distribution agreement, that we'll give you a place to put it. And if you end up with a commercial arrangement down the road, then we'll fall into line with that. This is a typical page that we have for in this case it's a producer, Rick Mercer's page, we do this for, basically if you go on our site you'll see that for every title we give it quite an extensive treatment, of long synopsis, as long a synopsis as people want to provide really, cast, characters, and so on. And we would do that again. We would offer that feature to anybody who wants to use our site for that kind of, to describe their material. So that's basically what we're doing. Happy to answer questions. We talked about some of the technology behind it, bit rates and so on, and DRM. Most of our stuff is not DRM protected. We're not big. We are DRM certified. Microsoft version, I think it's 10 now, 11, is where we're migrating to. We're not huge believers in DRM. And on the internet, we think it obstructs the legitimate distribution of video. But if people want to put a DRM on their titles, and some content providers do, then we support that. It's not our preferred way of doing things. We think the nature of the internet is free, and the more impediments people put to free viewing, the more piracy they're going to encourage, which is kind of what's already happening out there. And it's better for people to come up with sensible ways of displaying material, streaming it or downloading it, without creating impediments for people when they want to move it legitimately from one device to another in their own home, which is where DRM breaks down and why people end up giving up on it. Anyway, we'll talk about the technology, I'm sure, a little bit later.
Yes.
Thank you
very
much.
We'll get into more specific questions later. That was an excellent presentation. Thanks very much. And now we are going to move on to Andrew, who will tell us some true stories about true stories.
Hello, thanks for having me here. For all of you or any of you who don't know what AOL.com is right now, it's really a content company. And within AOL.com, we have a huge video portal which aggregates titles from every major studio to almost every major broadcaster. And it lives on AOLMoviePhone.com. And I think the way to transition into AOL True Stories is to say that we're a standalone website, truestories.aol.com, as well as a branded channel within MoviePhone, AOL MoviePhone. And I'll begin by saying how True Stories came about, and that's a team of original programmers were at Sundance in 2006, and they come out of a screening, and they were in love with this movie, so they knew that it was going to be a story that needed to be told to everyone, and they wanted a way to show that movie, you know, so not only you can screen it, view it, but also interact with it. So we're looking at it as, you know, not just a website where you can come and view films, but also interact with them. We look at ourselves as a platform. So as you can see here, for every single film that we have, you're gonna be able to come onto the site and look at a film two ways. One is by streaming with ad support. And so you can view the whole film in its full length on True Stories. And that'll work with, there'll be a pre-roll ad, and then there'll be interstitial ads throughout the whole length of the film. You're also going to be able to download to own the film, and that's the second way you're going to be able to view the film on the site. We're also then able to link you directly back to the DVD, whoever has the DVD rights or whoever has the site, you know, for the film, will link you directly back to that site, so that if you want to purchase the DVD, you can go to that site and purchase it. And in terms of how those, you know, revenues work, as we're saying about, you know, the ad support, Rick did a good job describing that model. And within the stream, the download to own, the electronic sell-through, we allow our partners to have a predetermined price that they'll set for, you know, for the price of every download. And so they will see that amount of money for every download of a film. AOL will then come up with a retail price that'll be about 30% higher than that. And that'll be the retail price for the download of the film. The pricing moves from about $1.99 to $19.99. So we don't set parameters. We allow the partner to, you know, see what they want to get back for each film. That makes it economic for them. We do try to make sure that the price is consistent so that we think that it'll drive people to download it. You're not getting a solid DVD, so we have a, we'll say we probably want it less than your DVD price. What makes, all these films extraordinary is that it's a hand-curated slate of films. We're not an aggregator of films. We are trying to find films that speak to social, hot points, things that will galvanize opinion, things that are on the tip of everyone's tongue, things that we're going to want to respond to. And also, we're going to look at films that shine a light on communities that maybe people aren't aware of. And then with the user-generated, tools, we'll have blogging, but we'll not have blogging just with the viewers, but blogging with the filmmaker, so the filmmaker can blog with the viewers, the viewers can, blog with each other, and also when it's appropriate and possible to have, the subjects of the film be able to speak back to the audience. We have live embedded chat now, user ratings, everything to make sure that we're going to engage an audience, keep it interactive, keep it a platform, not just a portal where you can come, watch a movie, and go. The other important thing to think about is that with also all the films, we're also able to direct the viewer to any outreach that the film wants. If it's a subject that has lots of organizations that are attached to it, whether it be charitable or other websites or ways to find more, we provide those links right on the film's page. There's a page built out for every film. So that's the way we try to keep this a platform, keep people engaged with the film. And you'll see that power of AOL in certain ways is the power of the internet. It's a way to reach a massive audience, but it's also a way to get a niche film to the people who are really interested in it, and that they're able to come and also learn more about the film. For the films, we will have stills, we'll have bonus clips, things of things that'll allow them to take a deeper dive into every film. And as you can see here, one of the things that we try to do, and that we think that AOL is a great platform for, is promotional value for your film. So because AOL is one of the most trafficked websites on the web, we have 120 million unique viewers come on to AOL's welcome page every month. There are 40 million eyeballs that come on to AOL News, and then True Stories exists on Movie Phone, which has about 20 million. And we're able, within those proprietary websites within AOL, we're able to control that content. So if we work with a film that we think is going to, it's going to have a wide, audience, or it's, on the tip of everyone's tongue, we'll work with the welcome page to get on the welcome page. We have a direct lead on the welcome page. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people, depending on how many direct leads or how many days, can come on. They have seen your film's title. They'll come on to True Stories, and they'll either have streamed it, read about it, had the opportunity to download it, or go back to, as I said, link back to the website where you can actually purchase the film. Again, if it's another topic that's in the news, we'll work with AOL News and have have people have a direct lead from AOL News about a topic that's in the news and come right back to the film. And then, as I said, within AOL Movie Phone has ways to direct people to the film as well. And there are other sorts of ways, search engine optimization, things of that nature. So that's in a another way to think about the internet in terms of this huge promotional, especially AOL is a huge promotional value for your film. And then, as I said, with the Ground Truth, that was the movie at Sundance. There were amazing uploaded video testimonials by mothers of the troops, siblings. We're able to then, at Veterans Day, extend that interest in a film by possibly having live chats where it's possible, possibly even with celebrities, that'll also bring the awareness of your film to the viewers. I guess one of the other things you can see right now that we just started a partnership with HBO, which has been incredibly successful. We try to what we try to do every month is have one or two films that have not had their window, their theatrical or broadcast window, and so that we're able to have it on AOL True Stories, where you can actually come and stream the film, again, download it to own before the film comes out in the theater or on its television broadcast. In that sense, I will say that oftentimes we will have a featurette of the film, not necessarily the entire length of the film, depending on how the partner wants to work with the film. And sometimes actually, we're very flexible. We can work with the film at any point of its distribution. It's a very green, green territory. We have a non-exclusive license for the films for North American digital rights. We have a very small editorial team that was brought on. I'm a consultant. I was brought on to execute the editorial vision of the of the website. Basically your films will come to me, Stephanie Sherris, who's the general manager of the the website, and between the two of us we decide what we think would work extremely well on the site. The other thing you'll see is that there a new partnership with PBS and Independent Lens, which is a series that this year is being hosted by Terrence Howard. And it's the first time that they've worked with ad supported content, and the first time that they're using this sort of platform to drive awareness and eyeballs to the films prior to their TV broadcast, which I believe for Sentence Home is May 15th, and for Knocking by the Jehovah's Witnesses, May 22nd. So I'll.
Such a good way to end on a little plug there with the dates. Well, that was a lot of information. Thank you very much, everyone, for sharing. And now we're going to talk a little bit more and delve a bit deeper into some of the topics that you had just mentioned. Now, you were talking about your business models then. The paper download to own or free services, and how you have ads integrated in your cases. So with these online services then still being relatively new, there obviously isn't one tried and true business model that is going to work for services like yours across the board. But how did you make the decision then initially as to how you were going to set up the fee structure for users?
Who first? For us, it's a work in progress. We started out a couple of years probably thinking, like many other people, that the way online video was going to come down the pipeline was with major Hollywood blockbusters being released that way, and they would all be pay-per-view, either for a single viewing for $5 or something like that, or $15 for download to own. Well, we've decided after a couple of years of waiting for the major studios to get on with it, is that they're actually not going to be the first ones to the online distribution business. In fact, they're not the first ones, and they're not the most important ones today, that all kinds of other video are actually the predominant part of the online video market today. User-generated, of course, YouTube, etc. News. CNN, Fox News, and all these sites, AOL News, CBC.ca here in Canada, Simpatico. People are using these for news video clips, and we're getting used to it. We don't even think about it particularly as a new model. We just kind of got used to it all of a sudden. Sports highlights, music videos, and so on. These are the things that are actually filling the online video space in the early going. And for most of what I just mentioned, the model is free, advertising supported. And so where we all probably thought, and still do think, that for feature length established films, if I could use that phrase, that the eventual model, the model really probably will be pay-per-view, maybe subscription, that for most of the other content, which happens to be most of the content that people are actually watching over the internet right now, the model is actually mostly free, advertising supported. So as we've understood that better, and as that's developed, we've adapted our own thinking, which is why we're spending more time on the free content these days than we are on the pay-per-view side of things. But I think both are going to coexist. We try to be agnostic as to the model. That's our philosophy, is we're not here to be the gatekeepers. We're here to be the intermediary, the aggregator of audience on one side of the screen and content on the other, and let the marketplace of producers and viewers decide for themselves which is the best way they want to interact with each other. So we offer the content providers whatever model they prefer. If you want to put your material out there for free, great. If you want to put it out there on a subscription basis, great. If you want to put it out there on a pay-per-view basis, great. But what's actually happening today on the internet is that 85% of it is probably being viewed by, I think that's probably about the right number, maybe more than that, for free in an advertising supported environment.
I would echo a lot of those things, but focus a little bit on the content part of that. Is, you know, having streaming make something very immediate. You can come onto, you know, the websites and view these films for free. Then you're able to interact with them immediately, take that deeper dive, interact with them, instead of taking the extra step of download to own. Also, you know, with the streaming component, it frees you up, have a lot of flexibility to work with different kinds of content, whether or not it be shorter, you know, short films, which we have partnerships with lots of folks who curate, such as RealWorks, children's, teenagers' films, shorts, things, you know, things of that nature. Also, it frees us up to, you know, look at different kinds of projects in terms of, you know, possibly, let's say, you know, working with a festival, a documentary film festival, where they might have a special project where they're going to have films that are going to be showcased at their festival. There might be a time where we'll be able to run, you know, simultaneously or prior to an event, those films or that content. So from an editorial, you know, vision of that, we'd like to have that very immediate streaming experience.
And you had both mentioned it somewhat, but when you were talking about what audiences are ready to pay, then online, they are in some cases willing to pay something, but not necessarily the equivalent to the price that they would pay for a regular DVD in the store. So it seems like an interesting conundrum that's happening right now in terms of setting fees. But Andrew, you were mentioning then that it's the filmmakers that have the power with the True Stories then to decide what their fees will be.
Right, for the download to own, the electronic sell-through portion, we do allow it with our partners, whoever that may be, you know, the producer or the distributor, depending on where the film is, they're able to set that fee. Mm-hmm. It's predetermined, and for every download, they will get that amount for that download. Right. And there are lots of, you know, theories from lots of different producers, lots of different distribution companies on, you know, what their economic models are to get their films out. Sometimes it's institutional, educational, so they'll have higher prices on their titles. Other times, you know, it'll be a commercially driven company where they're more in line with what you might see, you know, at a retail outlet or Netflix, in terms of the price that you're going to pay for that. So as I said, the one thing we try to keep in mind is you're not, you know, still you're not getting that DVD, you're not getting that hard copy. And so we try to, you know, encourage or try to work with you to say, we think this works best, this will drive, you know, sales to your film.
But the fact that you are leaving it up to the filmmakers to determine what that price point is going to be is something that I'm sure people in the audience appreciate here. Nina, you were mentioning then, and since Andrew, you had just spoken about some of the educational type offerings. Nina, you were saying that on your website you have some of those offerings. And maybe if you can all then explain some more about, because I think this would really help the people here in the room, what exactly you are looking for. In your case, you want content that is going to extend the festival, so that it's a year-round event almost. But really, what you are looking for in a nutshell compared to what you will not accept, just in case anybody here is interested in getting involved in your services.
I would just like to say a few more words about this paid service, basically, in the way how we made this decision. It's a very specific situation with the financing documentary, creative documentary films in Central and Eastern Europe in general, more in Eastern Europe than in Central Europe. And it's very hard for us to set such a system which would fit to both Western and Eastern audience, because the prices are so different. And we are literally looking, we're very trying to hit this best balance for the films to be both affordable for the Western or for the Eastern audience, and not to be too cheap for the Western audience.
Right.
Yeah. So this is one of the problems I'm facing with most of the time. So we leave it, as I said, on the individual discussion between the filmmakers and us. It's not that one film. Basically, the system that we set is that the price for the original quality DVD for the download should be the half of the price as it is in a regular, if you go to buy it in a regular store. Yeah.
Okay.
So if it's like $20, for example, in the store on the Docker, you can get it for $10.
Right.
And I found it's not the case with the students' work. Students' work is the one where you offer for free. But for the other films, I think it's fair, and that's something what we are trying to do. We would like to bring some preventive and some, at least, symbolic profit for the filmmakers as well. So greater part goes for them. That's what I mentioned at the beginning. It's 60 to 40.
Right.
And concerning the content itself, what I said, saying about the criteria we follow, there's something what we are not really focusing on are the films which are really made for the like TV profile documentaries.
Okay.
That's something what we are really trying to escape of, and the films which are produced for the TV stations.
Right.
So it's something more progressive and provocative you're looking for.
Right. The TV work certainly does have a certain tone, so I understand how that would fit with your mandate then. And Rick and Andrew as well, then, maybe things that you would not be interested in as far as nonfiction.
Well, we're interested in everything as long as it conforms with the laws of whatever country it might be displayed in. So we're not interested in illegal material and, you know, hateful kind of, there are things that people can do with video and the written word that actually break the law. We're not interested in that. And we stop short of X-rated content. It's just a matter of policy on our site. And so basically within those parameters, if you really have the license to, if you have the rights to display it on the internet, we'd love to have your content. We're letting the marketplace decide what people will watch. And we're happy to see communities of particular interest develop around our website. That's what the internet can facilitate. And so whether it's the actual film content, the video content, or as you're saying, Andrew, the discussion around that, the interactive part of it, the feedback to the filmmaker and the two-way feedback, the interaction that can happen between the viewers and the content producers, we think that's all very important. So we're quite happy to see all kinds of content flourish on our site. We've got huge silos of content. I mentioned, I think, Bollywood and anime and so on, that we've got on 3,000 documentaries already available in DVD format on our website. So we're very seriously committed long-tail provider. We believe in the long tail. I mentioned we've got 55,000 titles on our site. I expect that number is going to be 200,000 a year or two from now, or I don't know what number it's going to be. It's going to be some humongous number. And that's all to the good. What is then important in terms of sites like ours, like all three of ours, is to help viewers faced with this overwhelming variety of content navigate their way to stuff that they're going to be interested in and benefit from. however we define benefit. And those are, that's about technology tools to some extent. We spent a lot of time developing those. It's about this, technology jargon is personalization and recommendation. It's helping a viewer determine what they're interested in and find other like content that will appeal to their interests that they may not have heard about. And it's about the community at large helping people find things that they're interested in. So we're quite happy to have as vast an array and as deep and broad an array of content as people want to put there, and our role is to help develop the tools and provide the tools and the interaction so that people can find their way to content that they're going to be interested in, and you can find your way to an audience.
I'll start by saying, as an all-documentary website, I'll take a cue from our title, True Stories. I mean, the real passion behind this is that we're interested in these stories of real people and having viewers identify with these films, with these stories. We're interested broadly in just about anything. I'll look at everything. I mean, one thing I will say right now, we launched in December 06, and right now we're only looking at English-speaking titles. And then, thinking about the two things of, the massive audience of the internet, and also the niche-driven way that the internet works, and then maybe with an overlying thought as to the demographics of AOL's audience, are always I'll always work with those, but ostensibly that doesn't leave anything out. But I would say that we're looking for films that are galvanize opinion. Are social, political, environmental, global topics that are on people's minds, and that we think that people that'll grab their attention. At the same way, smaller films that might we have an Oaky Noodling by Bradley Beasley, which is about catfishing with bare hands. So, and these are communities that people we think are interesting. The stories are really well told. And so we'll work that way as well. And then I would say in terms of certain we'll have certain audiences on AOL, maybe for sport, extreme sports, things of that nature. We'll look at those as well. So we're looking for titles that are very wide, but again, we want them to have a real storytelling component to them, so that a viewer will be engaged from the very beginning and keep them engaged and want to dig deeper into the topic.
And Andrew, when you had mentioned that there are these niche communities that exist online that you're hoping that these films will find their way to, or vice versa, actually, I should say, that the audiences will find them, but there is also the overall wide mass, large internet audience. Are there any surprises that each of you have found now that you've gotten a better sense, I'm sure, of who exactly is using your services? Anything that surprised you about maybe a blog that they really took to, or an element of your service that you've ramped up even more now because it proved to be very successful?
Well, I think with the the video upload testimonials for films such as Sentenced Home with the Combating Refugees, or The Ground Truth with Troops, or the addiction series on HBO, where you can actually, people are posting in all forms, whether or not it's video, but or live chat or message boards or blogs, their stories and their outreach and how to how they've coped with all sorts of problems, or how they're relating, or how they could help members of the community that have faced the same circumstances or issues.
You can't get more personal or connected than that, really.
Yeah, so I mean, we're always, we're always thinking about, the new, keeping those tools very vibrant, and mm-hmm. we're also able to hopefully, get people, to blog about these and have that, trickle viral effect of the internet for, keep this platform very interactive.
Mm-hmm. Something more different, just one idea came to my mind, one topic that is really important, so I would like to hear how are you facing with it, and are you having this kind of problem in Canada or in the States? the directors which are already very well known, like in Europe, for example, Jürgen Lev, if I would like to present his films on my platform, very often from those famous film directors, I hear this kind of opinion. You know, we are very scared. This kind of virtual outlets are available everywhere. We live in a time where everything is available, and we wouldn't like our work to be presented online, to be presented in this kind of way, yeah? So most of these films are made for theatrical distribution. They would like to have their film screened on the big screen. This is something I respect, I understand, but how are you facing with these kind of problems? Because we do very often. And when it comes to this point, I found as a crucial recognizable logo of our website. Because in this case, that's something that basically set us apart mm-hmm. in such a sense that filmmakers, if they are like very often having this kind of opinion, we will wait to see what will happen, yeah? Mm-hmm. So they're like waiting, they follow the work, they follow the new films we are putting online. So for them, this kind of security is very important. You know, the concept of the platform we have, it makes them, it influences their decision if they want to submit their film online or not. So that's something, I don't know, do you have this kind of experience or problems here as well?
Every day, every hour, whether or not we're talking to an individual filmmaker, you know, mm-hmm. depending on where that film is in distribution, and they may not, you know, so I might be talking to the filmmaker directly right off out of a festival, or I might be, you know, or a, you know, a distribution, mm. you know, company. And there are a myriad set of things, of, you know, issues for every single film in terms of just understanding, you know, the platform. And then that's part of it. I think that's what you're addressing. But then also, understanding the legal maze of rights and windows, you know, the myriad different windows that exist, not to mention Academy Award consideration or festival consideration, things of that nature. So there are numerous variables that go into every discussion for each film or each, you know, library of films that we're speaking with.
And when you mentioned rights, then I know that you had mentioned this in your presentations. Oh, sorry? Oh, I'm sorry, okay. Can everybody hear me? Okay. You had all mentioned in your presentations, but just to make it absolutely clear then how rights work with the filmmakers that submit their projects and have their projects available on your services then. How do your contracts with the filmmakers work, and which rights do you take then?
Okay, so licensor basically grants us a license to use and authorized audiovisual work. It's a non-exclusive license, and it is signed for certain territories and certain period of time. For most of them, we have signed a 2-year license. And as I said, it depends. Either we have a rights for the whole world mm-hmm. or for the central and eastern part of Europe. It depends from the film to film. It's all individually, yeah.
Okay.
And the royalty rate, we don't provide for the filmmakers any kind of minimal guarantee. I don't know what is your case, but for the royalty rate is defined by the contract, and 60% to 40%, 60% to goes to the filmmaker. So these are like most important points from the contract that I can discuss.
Okay. And Rick, what about you?
We've got different rights models coexisting on our site depending on the kind of content we're talking about and medium in which it's being distributed and the content provider. But for the part of it that I started talking about earlier on in my opening comments, the content that we're offering to host and serve for free from independent producers, essentially we're being very clear that we're not acquiring, don't mean to be acquiring intentionally or accidentally, any rights for quote-unquote traditional broadcast or traditional distribution through broadcast or theatrical. We're not interested in having those rights. We're not staking out any territory. We're leaving those in the hands of the content producer to do as you can with them. We are looking only for a license to display them on the internet. And for three years is the period that we stayed in our user agreement. But if somebody's got a different situation, then we'll take that into account.
Okay.
So it's an exclusive, it's a license exclusively for internet display, not for other forms of distribution.
But is it exclusive to your platform, or can we be built on both, say, Docker and Zipkin?
Oh, for Docker, it's also non-exclusive. I don't think, I apologize if I wasn't specific enough. Also, the rights which we are holding are only the streaming and download rights, yeah? And it's only for private use. In the case that art cinemas or any kind of film club from whatever southern Brazil wants to show this film, then they have to contact distributor directly, and all the informations are available on our web. So it's a non-exclusive license.
Same here.
With AOL, is also a non-exclusive one-year license for, you know, for the digital rights, North American territory only.
Okay, and we have some questions in the audience now, and we do have a microphone, so you can just wait for the microphone.
I have a question about True Stories. How important is it that the content is related to American issues? I'm also wondering if you know what your Canadian viewership is.
It's not important at all that it's about an American issue whatsoever. We're interested in, you know, actually issues, global, international. There's no, you know, we're actually, you know, we're even thinking of working with the UN in certain ways, films that they have, that, you know, where they have films about different hotspots all over the world. So it's not that it's America-centric whatsoever. It's just that it's because we know what our, you know, AOL's, you know, base of viewers is, and right now for True Stories, it's going to be English-speaking films only.
Related to just a Canadian issue, what are the chances? I mean,
well, that's a good question. I mean, we have to, you know, we have to support each film. We have to support the filmmaker. They have to be happy. We have to be happy. We have to kind of know, you know, where we think we can drive traffic. If it is a subject that is very particular, and we think that the film doesn't capture something that's going to, you know, make it more universal, maybe that might necessarily be something that we would consider in the selection process. But it can take place anywhere, as long as the story we think is strong enough that anyone anywhere would be interested in it. That's all we really are concerned about.
I have a question for Rick. For the users who, or the producers who put, it's me.
There you go.
who put their content on your site and choose to charge for the downloads, you said they get to keep 100% of those fees. Do you process that administration, or, yeah? And you report to the producers?
Yeah. That won't be live until the fall, that part of it. But that's what we're saying here. And this offer is for people who are have no commercial distribution, or more optimistically, pre-commercial. We're trying to give people a shelf to put some material on so that they will get noticed, their content will get noticed, and try to help people obtain other kinds of more commercial distribution arrangements. And when they succeed in doing that, we also would, their content would either come off our site, or it would continue on our site in a more traditionally commercial revenue sharing kind of format. But while people are in that non-commercial or pre-commercial state, the proposal is you can keep all the revenue. So yes, that's exactly what we're, and we'll eat all the costs, you keep all the revenue.
So can you hear me?
Yep.
So there is some form of agreement up front to say that you'll share a back end at some point?
No. There's nothing that's binding for, what we say in our agreement, yes, there is an agreement. There has to be an agreement, otherwise, you know, you have to state that you have the rights to that content and that we have the rights to display it on your behalf, blah, blah, blah. It says that if you achieve a commercial distribution arrangement, that we'll cooperate with you in whatever revisions need to be made to that arrangement. Typically, if you go with a broadcast, if HBO picks up some content you create, they're going to want to probably pull it off line for a period of time. Maybe not, depends on their strategy for the particular content. And we're not going to impede that.
Thank you.
There are some more questions. We've got a gentleman here in the corner.
Yeah, a couple questions maybe for Rick, actually. When people sell DVDs off your site, is volume a factor, meaning is somebody going to do better, but obviously if you rent more of their DVDs?
Do we rent more DVDs than we sell?
No, sorry. If let's say someone has a film on your site, you're renting the DVDs, and they are able, let's say, to rent far more than maybe you thought, then are they going to benefit, or is it essentially a standard rate no matter how many of the DVDs are rented?
Well, DVD rentals are in what's called, and you're probably familiar with this, the home video window. And so the license for those is unlimited. I can rent the same DVD as many times as people want to rent it. I need to buy more copies depending on how many people want to rent it simultaneously. So if there's a lot of demand, I'm going to end up buying more copies, and the content producer is going to benefit from me having bought more copies to satisfy higher rental demand. But the license terms, apart from just scaling by quantity of how many I purchase to satisfy my rental demand, the license terms don't really change. Did I answer your question? Did I understand?
Yeah,
your question?
I think so. That's fine. Thanks.
And another question here: the woman in the back with the white top. Sorry, I didn't realize there was another microphone up closer.
Thank you. Question for Rick, just to follow up on that: what would a license fee be on a rental? I mean, what would a content provider expect to get
on a DVD rental?
Mm-hmm.
We buy the DVD wholesale. And you get whatever, we buy it from distributors or from a content producer directly at whatever wholesale price is set. So, I mean, we buy DVDs typically for $20.
Okay.
You know, could be anywhere from $15 to $25. TV series, which have got four or five DVDs in the pack, that might be $50 or $60. But the content producers and their distributors set those fees. We buy them wholesale and we're allowed to rent them.
And for the gentleman from AOL, can you give us a best case scenario for content providers? Like what kind of revenue have they received so far, like in the best case?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, this is all new territory for just about everybody. I mean, we've only been up and running for about 4 months. One way to look at this is I heard someone give a panel discussion at Sundance, and for the DVD business, for the rental and purchase, it's about a $36 to $38 billion business. For the aggregate, in terms of electronic sell-through, it's about $200 million for all of that revenue. $200 million altogether.
A billion or million?
Million.
So just the content provider, where do they fit in, and what are they getting out of all of that?
Well, what I'm trying to say there is that the revenues that you're going to see from the electronic sell-through and streaming is not going to be as large as you're going to see from the sale or rental of DVDs. So that's what I'm saying there. I mean, the breakdown, as I went before, is there is an ad-supported streaming model, and as Rick said, people are actually using the streaming, and you are going to see money from that, but it's not going to, they're not going to be enormous checks yet. The consumer habits aren't quite there, but they're building every day, if not every month. Same with, the download to own. In a way, what we're also saying that with that, with those revenue streams, we're also building in this huge promotional vehicle for your film. When you have the power of AOL with, let's say 120 million unique visitors, or however large, that's invaluable. And the fact that we'll actually, link a viewer directly to the site of a film, then, drives DVD sales. So that's another way that we look at, how we add revenue to our, to our partners.
And do you do DVD sales as well?
No, we actually we link directly to the home video DVD licensor. You can purchase it, from them. They fulfill the orders. We do not, and nor do we take any of that revenue.
Thank you.
are some more questions? The woman here in the black top, or the gentleman in the gray top?
Actually, this is a continuation for everyone. I'm going to be launching some DVDs and selling them through my own website. So the question is, can we actually link through your website so that if people want to purchase the documentary, they can actually do it? You have a link to our website so they can do that. And I also have a second question, which is in terms of advertising, because you're talking about 50,000 titles, and you know, how do you decide which films or documentaries you're going to be putting up on your homepage, and which ones you're really going to be pushing, and which ones are going to kind of be shoved back, or do we as producers pay for advertising on your site to advertise our titles?
Who first? We'd be happy for you to take the space on our site where you can put a synopsis and everything else, and use it for a link to your own site to facilitate selling a DVD through your own website. If you hit the buy button on our website, we're processing the transaction. That's the way our technology is set up, and therefore we're collecting the payment, and we're paying whoever we're supposed to pay to do that, and we're making sure that it gets shipped. And if it doesn't get shipped within 24 hours, we're sending a follow-up email saying it didn't get shipped yet, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's a complicated exercise. But if you want to, that's when we do it. If you want to do it yourself, you can just put a link on the appropriate part of the website or in a blog or forum or someplace and say, hey, this is available here. We're happy to see that happen. As long as it's about films, as long as it's about video, we think it belongs on our site. If it's about, I've got a book I want to sell, that's not us. That's not what we do. And we don't do used cars and all that kind of stuff. There's a thing called eBay. It's pretty good at that. So we want to make sure it's about video. But as long as it's about video, we're happy for people to promote their content, discuss their content, rate their content, share their content with other people, advertise their content. In terms of advertising, this is quite an important part of our philosophy. We do not. We try to be a neutral intermediary between the content providers and the content consumers, the viewers. And the way films get positioned on our website, which ones get recommended, which ones get rated highly, which ones get pushed out to people, are driven by our community ratings and word of mouth and so on. The only tweaking we do of that is we try to customize it to the individual members, the individual viewers' particular history. So if we know somebody, you know, really likes films about, really likes anime, for instance, we'll recommend more anime content to them because we're trying to make it relevant to the particular person. But we don't accept studio advertising for that part of our business. We don't accept individual, independent producer advertising either. We don't tilt those based on our transactions with anybody, any third party, to affect what we recommend to people. It's actually a neutral recommendation that we're offering people based on, not neutral, we don't pretend that all film is all of equal interest or equal, quotes unquote, value, but we let the community determine that through the ratings that are there. And that's how people, that's what determines what gets positioned where on most of our website. I mean, we do have things like what's new in studios this week, or what's new in releases this week, and things like that, which we do tend to orient a little bit more towards what we know are going to be the most heavily in demand thing. You know, we've got a thing on our website where people can, months before something's released, start selecting and adding it to their zip lists. So that when it comes out on DVD format, for instance, or when it is released in the internet environment, we already have a predetermination of what the strength of demand for it is the day before it's released. And so we tend to, you know, again, but that's we tend to promote things based on that. But again, that's community driven. It's driven by the member selections.
Sanka, and the others as well.
Yes, please. So I also would be happy to exchange links with your website. But concerning the promotion itself, basically, as I said at the beginning, this is initiation of the film festival, and which is beside the online platform having a different kind of event. So the promotion is done through, we are owning basically four different websites. One is For the Market, one is Documentary Internet, which is run by Institute of Documentary Film, then it's our festival. So the promotion is done basically on five different webs which are linked. So if you're looking for the, let's say, information or an interview with a filmmaker or the information about artist's new work, you can find it in one of those four web pages. So if you, the search or the browser is basically connected, linked with this
for websites. But concerning the promotion itself, it's something what we do. So we are requesting different kind of materials, stills, trailers, interviews, synopsis, treatments, as much as we can get to promote the film, but it's done by us, not by the filmmaker.
Again, since we were a curated slate of films, or a fairly small slate of films, we're not an aggregator, and it's important for us, you know, to, as I said, support each filmmaker. We're going to try to take titles that we think that we can promote. I mean, we'll promote them as much as we can on the site itself. And then, as I said, in terms of we're hopefully, you know, every web, you know, it's proprietary websites, you know, within the content of AOL, they'll have editorial decisions too, but we work with them. And that's how, you know, part of our thinking is what are the films that we think that we can promote highly, not only on True Stories, but on the welcome page, you know, AOL News, things of that nature. Because that is a very, you know, very important part of what we think we're offering in terms of right now, you know, the promotional value, and again, driving DVDs, which takes back to your first question, is absolutely we have the link right there when you're, you know, when you're watching the film, there'll be a link to take you to purchase the DVD. The only thing, you know, there would have to be a quality control element in terms of the payment assurance, you know, how. That's the only thing that we would ever take into consideration in terms of a standalone performer, such as a private individual distributing their film. But otherwise, absolutely, we will link right to the fulfiller of the DVD orders.
And there were some more questions, some more hands raised. Okay, the woman in the black top here.
Hi. So I just sort of had a question around the sort of content and related. So I'm understanding that in each individual group, you and your group decides what videos and what shows and movies you're going to put up, and it's the audience is not making suggestions or offering things or anything like that. I'm not sure if I have that right. And then the thing is if you do have something very controversial that you decide individually that you want to show that you think is important, newsworthy, whatever it may be, how would you handle, if it was very political, like pressure to remove it, or moderate your discussion board in case some people get unruly and it sort of ruins it for everyone, where you could discuss something controversial and it would be a great opportunity to look at something and for people to learn. So something that might pop into my mind might be like the thing about Rachel Corrie. Just that was off the top of my head. It could be anything where no one will let that play come out anywhere type of thing for whatever reason. So like what if you wanted to show, I don't know, something? How have you thought about that? Has that come up or is it
true? Sure. On the first part of your question, as to member suggestions, viewer suggestions, on a DVD library, we absolutely do take viewer suggestions. In fact, we guarantee people that if it's available legally in Canada, we'll go and acquire it. We only need one person to make a suggestion. That's our, like I said earlier, our brand promise. And we've had, of our 55,000 DVD titles, we probably had 5 or 10,000 of them come from member suggestions. We value that channel. I mean, we go out of our way to make sure our offering is comprehensive, but it's impossible to keep track of everything that's going on. We buy basically everything that suppliers let us know exist. We add it to our library. But we, you know, beyond that, there are things that we don't hear about or don't hear about in a timely fashion. And we hear about that from our members and we add those to our DVD library promptly. On the internet video side of things, it's even more wide open. I mean, while we're sitting here, people are going onto our website and uploading user-generated video right now. They do it every day, and we pay no attention to what they're uploading unless we receive a complaint about it. We don't screen it, we don't filter it, we don't gatekeep it, we don't review it before it's posted. It's posted when someone puts it there. And if they violate the rules, you know, there is an end-user agreement there, that says you're respecting the law and you have the legitimate right to put this stuff on a public website, et cetera, and you're not putting up illegal material, then as long as, and so before you upload something onto our website, you have to agree to that, but that's a click of the button. If we receive a complaint, we'll adjudicate it, and if it looks like someone is, you know, breaking the rules, they could lose their ability to post something on our website. But usually, we haven't had that problem yet, but I'm sure that we will at some point in time. In terms of what kind of content we would steer away from, only really the two criteria I mentioned earlier. As long as it's not illegal, as long as it's not promoting hatred or violence or something like that, you know, runs afoul of the laws that exist in our country and elsewhere surrounding that kind of content. And it's not porn, because it's not that we're trying to be prudish about that, but we just don't feel like becoming a porn site. There's enough of them around, and the planet doesn't really need another one. So we've chosen a different particular business model, and where people can use the website and for non-porn type video. Those are really our only two constraints. Provided you've got legal rights to what you're putting there, and you respect, A, that it's not in violation of some other law or not porn, help yourself.
And there were some more questions in the back, please, at the gray top.
Hi. I just wanted to know from the panel, what length do you accept? Do you accept only feature length or a compilation of shorts or maybe two mid-length films?
We accept everything. For us, we don't have a different categories. We have, I said at the beginning of my presentation more about these categories, about contemporary overview, past archive, or coming soon category, but concerning lens, we accept any lens.
Same thing with us. You can even upload it yourself if the file size is less than 500 megabytes. If it's longer than that, send it to us on a DVD or a CD or, you know, whatever medium you've got, and we'll upload it for you. And that's really just a matter of convenience, because we don't want to subject someone to a 7-hour upload of a long item to have their connection go wonky 3/4 of the way through that and have to start over again. So just a practical thing. But we're happy to display whatever length people want to provide.
Can you talk about the user-generated tools in terms of uploading content, or are you actually talking about content that we license and distribute?
The first part.
What?
Just the uploading.
Just the...
I guess I'm interested in hearing both your answers.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I couldn't hear the question.
Sorry?
I couldn't hear that question. Could you say it again, please?
Oh, I'm just wondering what lengths you accept in terms of, I guess, distribution and also online.
Well, it's very flexible. We take very, very short films to. We actually have a documentary that I think is over close to 3 hours long on true stories. So it really depends upon depends if it's powerful, tells a story, and we think that our viewers will be interested.
Okay, so then those are for the films that people are submitting to you to be shown on the site. Then
correct.
And that.
I just realized I didn't answer your question about the moderating the forums themselves. There are some rules of conduct about the forums, about profanity and attacking each other and, not engaging in slander and libel, et cetera, et cetera. So everybody who enters the forum space is asked to agree to those rules. Beyond that, we moderate them only in reaction to complaints. And so every post that anybody puts on our site in a forum or a blog has a when anybody else is reading it, can report offensive content. And we take a look at it and we warn people. But the fact that something is politically sensitive or that some people are uncomfortable and other people are not, that to itself would not indicate to us that there's an issue. If we've got some kind of flame war going on in a forum on our site and it's actually, conducting itself not as a heated discussion of politically sensitive or otherwise sensitive topics, but it's actually crossing the line into personal attacks and so on, we probably act to discourage people from continuing in that vein and might even shut it down. But we haven't encountered that. We're not afraid of having controversial discussion on a site. I mean, we have people having controversial discussions about parts of our own service, part of what we've got on our website, because we believe in the community side of things and crowdsourcing and the wiki kind of idea, collaboration, is we've got a suggestion box about how we can improve our own site and features. And, you know, we get into vigorous debates with people, members get into vigorous debates with each other about us, which is kind of a little hard to observe sometimes.
And we've got a few more minutes left, so we can take a couple more questions there. The gentleman in the gray shirt.
Yeah, I wondered about the issue of in broadcast for broadcaster, you have to get your rights for music, for all kinds of archival content, et cetera. Have you looked at that side of content that's being delivered to you? Where does the liability fall if I take a I don't have a broadcaster, I have a film and I use somebody's music. Where is the liability there? Is the music publisher going to be coming after me, after you? What's been your view of that, or how is that going to play out?
Well, it's a very big issue, and I think at one level there's kind of a BC-80 point of departure here. Before anybody thought of the internet, there's all kinds of content that got produced where those kind of rights are now totally unclear, and people are having to go back retroactively and try to sort out rights for content that was created 10 or 30 years ago. And that's proving to be easy in some cases and hopelessly difficult in others. Then there's the period that we're in now, which is presumably after everybody's figured out there's such a thing called an internet, and when I'm creating my content from whatever sources I use, I should acquire the rights to distribute it in that medium, in that environment, just like I acquire the rights to distribute in any others. I mean, before I sat down at this panel, someone handed me a form to fill out, which I didn't happen to have my lawyer here with me, so they didn't review before I signed it, and I truthfully didn't even read it, but it was releasing my rights for this to be distributed over the internet. You know, and if I was in your shoes, an independent producer of content, I would make sure that the legal language I was using with anybody I was hiring or any content I was securing for whatever I was producing was broad enough to encompass the internet part of distribution. If you don't do that and you then want to distribute on the internet, you got to go and renegotiate all that, and it's going to cost you more money and hassle and time, and you might not even succeed at it. But most people who are producing content now are producing it with an eye towards this may end up being distributed over the internet, so I better put that phrase in along with the other rights I'm securing, just as I signed that away here today. I'm hoping there's a royalty.
It was also your house actually.
You know, when you go to a broadcaster, they want to see your insurance, they want to see your releases and all those things.
We're a little bit more in the...
In your position, you're not going to be looking for that.
No, we're a little bit more in the YouTube kind of world. We're asking you to assert you have the rights. If you go and post something on YouTube, you're claiming you have the rights to do what you're doing, and that you're not violating someone else's copyright, and YouTube then acts in response to a complaint from a copyright holder if they choose to exercise that, and they pull the content down. And if somebody keeps violating content rights on their site, they'll eventually discontinue that person's ability to upload content. You know, they're going now proactively beyond that and securing broader rights from networks and so on. And royalty, revenue sharing agreements, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we approach it that way, that if you come to our site and put something there, we ask you to attest, in our legal agreement with you, we're asking you to attest that you have clear right to the content you're putting there. So if you're using some third-party music, to take your example, you should probably be careful, because there is some other creator there who's got an interest in that. You probably don't have those rights to just kind of throw them into your production. And if you do, then that's great, and we're asking you to say that you do. And if somebody else comes along and complains, we will respond quickly to that complaint, because that's how we mitigate damage on our behalf and on yours, and we'll say to you, please don't do that again.
Also, I think, you know, it has come up once a few times where, you know, we will work with a film at any part of its distribution. So a few times people have, you know, only secured festival rights for their music or their clips. And unfortunately, we're not able to work with that material until, you know, you're able to, you know, clear all rights for everything, all clips, all music in your film. We won't be able to work with the film.
So music is one of the problem areas here.
Because it's expensive, as we know, documentary filmmakers, it's, you know, even sometimes festival rights is very expensive. So we understand it, but we have to work with that rubric.
And Nina, you were going to say?
Yeah, it's the same situation exactly in Czech Republic for the films that were produced 2000 and the archive films. We are most of the time dealing with archive material problems. Yeah, so because the rights are not cleared, or they were cleared but for non-commercial use only. So these are the things but the content provider needs to basically declare in the contract that it's authorized to use this. And in the case if it's not and want to put the content on our web, then it has to be done post-festum, and that's the big problem what they're facing nowadays. Yeah.
Okay. It's so impossible though to exaggerate how fast this whole environment is evolving, this question of rights. I mean, nobody thinks about it anymore, but when Google was launched, which is only, 7 or 8 years ago, or when it became predominant, there were many people who said that was illegal. You know, newspaper publishers said, how can you be earning money from running a search on my database and posting on your list of found items, you know, that there happens to be one at the Globe and Mail or National Post and New York Times or whatever it is. And there were a lot of publishers who thought that this was, you know, wrong, just as there were people a year ago who said the same thing about YouTube. And today, you know, people like us and people like publishers go out of their way to do this arcane thing called search engine optimization to make sure that your stuff is found by Google and is reflected on that page that you used to think was maybe, you know, some kind of kidnapping of people's content. They don't think of it that way anymore. They want to make sure that their content is displayed there because it's good advertising for you. So we kind of have sometimes a first instinct of this is how this is wrong, or this is right, or this is the way to do it. The whole DRM discussion is one of those areas. You know, everybody thought the right way to protect content on the internet was to attach this thing called DRM. If you actually go to the major studios who sponsored that idea a few years ago in the wake of Napster and everything else, they actually will now tell you that's not working and they need a new solution. They don't know what that is. But, you know, the first attempt isn't really working because consumers hate it. And it's not because they're intent on piracy. It's their intent on common sense use of that content. You know, because business I'm in, I don't want to run afoul of anybody's copyright. I supply my kids with paid subscriptions to music download sites so they can do it all legitimately, and they don't do it. They just go and swap music with each other because the download thing is so clumsy and so awkward, and when their device breaks down, the battery goes on it, they don't recharge it, and their rights are all, blah, blah, blah. You know, then they get mad at dad because he's making them use this old-fashioned thing called, you know, legitimate downloading. And it's not because they're intent on piracy. I'm happy to pay for it because I think it's good behavior for the kids. But it's because it's so clumsy that they won't actually use it. And they really object, as I do, frankly, to the idea that you should have to pay 2 or 3 times for the same content because you may want to watch it on 2 or 3 different devices or listen to it.
All right, and I think that is all the time we have for today, so unfortunately no more questions, but thank you very much to the panelists for attending.
And I'd like to also say a special thanks to Xbox and Vision TV for their support for this panel, and do come back at 3:30 to 5 for our Putting the Fun in Factual event if you're around then. Thanks.